On this Labor Day weekend of 1964, I sincerely appreciate this opportunity to talk to you about what this day really means, or should mean, to all those whose intelligence, skill, education, and training have given America the finest, most efficient, most productive, and most loyal labor force in the world. Of all our national holidays, Labor Day is the most appropriate for a restatement of the fundamental principles upon which our country was built. And this Labor Day of 1964 is more appropriate than ever before because far too many people have apparently forgotten these principles. Labor Day was created many years ago by and for the workers of America as their own special day, as a day when we celebrate not the conquests of war or even the great deeds of national heroes, but rather a day when we honor the inherent God-given dignity of human beings and the worth of human labor to our country and its important role in our kind of society. And yet, it has not always been so, despite the biblical injunction that the laborer is worthy of his hire. It was no more than a generation or two ago that millions of Americans, including not only men, but women and children as well, were not considered to be worthy of their hire in terms of decent wages, decent hours, or decent conditions of employment. As is the case in so much of the rest of the world today, time was in our own country that working men and their families had very little hope of sharing in the great wealth and abundance that they, through their own labor, produced. The good life that so many Americans enjoy today, the higher standards that this Labor Day typifies for some Americans at least, did not come easily or automatically or through natural evolution. It came only because at each stage in our industrial development, there were always some who rebelled against economic injustice. There were always some who were willing to work and to fight, yes, and often to suffer for greater equity and justice in the relationship between workers and our developing industrial system. And those who rebelled against these inequities and against these injustices soon learned that they as individuals were helpless and ineffective in their individual efforts to bring about corrections. The very nature of our industrial system compelled those workers to organize in order to receive any kind of recognition of their just grievances. Thus, notwithstanding the self-serving propaganda about the great potentials of individualism, it was the organized workers whose efforts and sacrifices brought about the improved standards of living for millions of our working families who enjoy such standards today. Today we hear many criticisms of organized labor, many demands that the power and the influence of unions be curbed. We hear politicians who tell us that we need laws to break up the unions and to curtail the right of unions to strike in protest against economic injustice. But it is appropriate on this Labor Day to once more recall what all wage earners once knew without being told, that the present standards of life of the American people as a whole could not have been accomplished without the pressure of unions for higher wages, shorter hours, and better working conditions. For no matter how some newspapers and magazines and politicians or corporations try to rewrite our history, it is important that we remember on this Labor Day that it was America's labor movement, its unions, more than any other single institution in our society, that made it possible for millions of American working families to reach higher standards of living and education, to enjoy more leisure through shorter hours and vacations, to secure more medical care, to leave the slums and go to live in the suburbs, and to look forward after a life of honest work to a pension and some measure of decency and dignity in retirement. But also on this Labor Day, we must not believe the propaganda that because of all of this, the race is run, or that the battle for social and economic justice in America is won. It is, of course, encouraging to note that many people in recent months have come to recognize what unions have known for a long, long time, that in the midst of all of our abundance, in the midst of our great productive potential, in the midst of our plenty, millions of our fellow citizens still live in abject poverty, which is both unnecessary and unworthy of our great country. In this regard, of course, it is encouraging to note that at long last our Congress has recognized this problem and has taken the first needed step toward its solution. But in taking this step, we must not forget that there are still other millions who are not considered to be poverty-stricken, but who nevertheless cannot achieve the decent standards of living for themselves and their families that are considered to be minimum by the Department of Labor. To my office each month come many letters from people like these, good people and decent people, people who want nothing more than a chance for something better than a hand-to-mouth existence. They write to describe how hard it is to live on $3,000 or $4,000 a year in a country where the Department of Labor considers that the average family needs at least $6,000 a year to maintain bare minimums of decency. Not so long ago, for example, I received just such a letter from a wife of a member of the Machinist Union that I would like to share with you because I think this letter says something about America that needs to be said over and over again, and especially should be said on this day that we have dedicated to the dignity of those who work. The pertinent part of her letter reads, and I quote, "I have stopped reading magazines telling of the glorious American standard of living. This is only a slap in the face to the average wage earner. Whenever a cost of living budget appears in one of the newspapers, I read it because I wonder if anyone has actually made a study of the real needs of the American working family. It takes money to care for a baby, and more money each year as the baby grows older. We really have no right to bring children into the world if we can barely keep them from starving. There is really nothing cute about a hungry baby," unquote. In this letter, we hear echoed the true and authentic heartbeat of a great forgotten part of the American people. This is not the voice of Madison Avenue or the professional prose of the high-paid propaganda artist. This is the voice of a normal, decent, and hard-working American housewife who, like millions of others, is frustrated to the point of desperation with the almost impossible task of feeding, clothing, housing, and educating a family on the kind of wages that so many workers, not considered poverty-stricken by our standards, take home, even in these so-called times of affluence and prosperity. I think it is important, even necessary, that we listen to voices such as these, for in them we hear the authentic voice of the American people. And by listening, we begin to better understand how far and how difficult is the road still before us. We have heard much in recent months, and especially in recent weeks, about the rights and the freedoms of man. But freedom has many meanings. It means freedom for the poor to remain poor. It means freedom for the powerful to exploit the weak. It means freedom of workers to bear the full social and economic costs of unemployment. It means freedom for children to attend overcrowded and understaffed schools and to be denied a higher education. It means freedom of the elderly to suffer and die unnecessarily, because they cannot afford the medical care they need. To some, these are the definitions of freedom. But these are not the kind of freedoms that are referred to in the basic documents of our country. These are not the kind of freedoms that will liberate the millions who still live in poverty, nor the millions of others who inhabit the bleak edge of want. So on this Labor Day, as we put summer aside and prepare for the fall and the winter that follow, let us take these few brief moments to acknowledge once more our country's vast debt to the workers of the country. The majority of our citizens, those who dug the coal, who built the railroads, who spanned the rivers, who built the cities and filled the arsenals, yes, and those who fought the wars that have kept America strong and truly free. Without labor, the creator of all wealth, really, the vast fortunes and the great corporations of America would not have been possible. And in these times when so many people talk so glibly about rights and freedoms, let us never forget that workers also have rights. Rights that are due their great contribution to our society. And let us remember most of all that a worker is not a material commodity like copper or fertilizer or steel. A worker is a person with a God-given soul and a spirit. He is more to be valued and more to be protected than a tin mine, an oil well, an acre of pulpwood, or a financial investment. And finally, let us recognize workers are human beings, the human beings of which our country is made. The right that every worker, every man or woman who works for wages anywhere in this great country deserves is the right to receive a fair day's pay, not only because it is just, that he or she enjoy the fruits of their toil, but because it is good for society. It is good for our entire country. A thriving and prosperous workforce is the most essential foundation of any good and just society. This is the meaning. This is the true meaning of this Labor Day of 1964.